This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking all about body-focused repetitive behaviours. This is an area of mental health we've wanted to talk about for so long. I feel like I've been saying that every other episode, but we have genuinely been booking in some guests that are offering perspectives we've been keen for and getting to talk about themes that we know are important and we've not found quite the right fit for yet. And so this is another one of those occasions. And I'll start off with some background from WebMD. Body-focused repetitive behaviours, often shortened to BFRBs, are intense urges like biting, picking, and pulling that can cause damage to our body. As many as 1 in 20 people have a BFRB, but they can often be dismissed as bad habits. Whilst BFRBs share some symptoms with obsessive-compulsive disorder, these are separate diagnosable conditions. Today we'll be specifically talking about trichotillomania, which is hair pulling. This can be hair anywhere on the body, and there's a great deal of variation on what that means for each person, and dermatillomania, which is skin picking. And as I mentioned, they both fall under that umbrella term of body-focused repetitive behaviours and share many traits. So, of course, the repetitive nature and the compulsive feeling of doing these behaviours in a way that for many people isn't always conscious and sometimes is rarely conscious. Another example that many people will be familiar with will be nail biting as well, that also falls under this umbrella term.
Yes, I think that's really interesting to mention there, because it seems also more socially acceptable, doesn't it, to sit and bite your nails, you know, something else that you might be doing, or picking other skin. But nail biting and maybe picking skin around the hands, that can cause, you know, a friend of mine literally had an infection through biting her nails, and she's got children and she's trying to work and do all that, and it's all caused because she bites her nails. And it's still to this day, it's not been recognised. But I think what's interesting is, though, a lot of these people who are experiencing the conditions, as you can tell, listeners, I'm trying to avoid using the terms, because Bobby did such a good job of using these terms as such long words, and I don't want to get them wrong. But people who are experiencing this condition often can be dismissed because it's not just a bad habit. So yeah, I just think that's a really important point.
Yeah, absolutely. And within the world of mental health, this is an area which is often not talked about. There can be so much shame, so much distinct stigma to it, that can be a bigger problem in terms of getting support, as opposed to there being any kind of absence of support. There is loads of practical forms of support. And in fact, in the episode, we're talking about a cutting edge piece of technology that can help with this behaviour, both increasing your awareness and getting you out of this habit, whether that's that you're finding other ways to direct this kind of energy, or whether it's eliminating it altogether by noticing more when you're doing it, what kind of things are triggering the behaviour, are the situations you need to remove yourself from. And one of our two guests in particular talks about how much it's linked to confidence for her. And so she's getting support with the physical side of what these behaviours are and how she can reduce the prevalence of them, but also what's underlying. And it's very strange to be talking about a mental health condition that in many ways is discriminated against because of the physical symptoms. So often we're used to people not taking it seriously because it's all in your head, you know, those kind of stigmatising terms. Whereas this is the case of, no, you can see the behaviour. And you can see the damage it can cause, depending on the level of severity. But still, people will dismiss it, like you say, calling it a bad habit. Another way as well it can be dismissed within the medical or mental health community is in terms of the comparison with self-harm as well. Because whilst in the broad sense of it, it is a type of you harming yourself, these are diagnosable conditions that are specific to themselves, as opposed to self-harm that is a symptom of other conditions. So it is common that somebody could have this type of behaviour and not engage in any other behaviours that would cause themselves physical harm. So it's important to acknowledge that it is distinct. It is a specific behaviour that needs specific treatment. And again, it's the lack of conversation, the lack of understanding. And yet that's in massive contrast to what I said from WebMD. 1 in 20 people are estimated to have one of these conditions. And I did some quick maths on it. That's over 55 million people across the UK and continent of Europe.
Wow. At the number of people, and wow, at your quick maths. I didn't research that before we started in the intro.
I did do the maths. The maths is written down. I feel like I need to admit it. I can't do that proportion of the globe in my head, no. But I do have it written down from prior calculations. But, you know, it's so often we get stats like this where it's just a crazy number of people. Yes, I use that word crazy on purpose. So many people being affected by this, and yet the level of understanding is so low, and a lot of the thinking around it can be very counterproductive. One more thing I'd just like to mention as well is, in terms of listeners, if you are hearing the experiences of our two guests today and relating to it, I would very much encourage you to check out some NHS links I'm going to put in the episode description to go directly to information about what these conditions are, what kind of treatment is available, or if you're not in the UK, obviously whatever your equivalent would be. The reason being, a lot of the coverage of these conditions I find to be quite concerning. There seems to be a mentality of, okay, we need pictures for everything. And for many people, whether you're living with one of these conditions or not, they can be very distressing to look at. And that's why I would encourage you to go directly to medical sources for the kind of information where that's not going to be happening, where you can get the written advice, signposting to where you can get support, as opposed to shock value imagery, which I'm sure gets clicks, but I'm not sure is helpful in terms of forwarding these conversations and normalising actually how common these conditions are.
Yeah, Bobby, I totally agree. And that's absolutely the right thing to do. And just while you mentioned that, I think it's, you know, on the point, and it gets discussed more in the episode brilliantly by the guests, but, you know, being aware of, again, there are physical implications of these conditions. And because of the stigma that you've just mentioned, and because we're not talking about it, even though there's so many people who are experiencing it, the fact that we then don't know how to offer support to people who are experiencing this, or rather, even worse, we comment, you know, and we're a little bit more further down the road with commenting on weight. We understand that maybe we stop and think before we tell somebody how much weight they've put on or how much weight they've lost. But with similarly with things like this, and when there can be, you know, serious implications physically, as to not be commenting on appearance and the damage that people are doing. But as I said, that, you know, they do go into that more in the episode. But I just wanted to highlight that because I think that's something to figure out, even if you're not experiencing the condition or feeling that you are, but you might know somebody, or you will come across somebody maybe one day, that is, to check yourself when it comes to how you might respond to that situation is really important.
Yeah, brilliant point. And we don't want people feeling any more self-conscious. And indeed, then, you know, that can potentially make them worse. And also, it reminds me of what our other guests said. So our two guests today, Jessica Farmery and Louisa Zetnig, will both be talking about the Nudge Band that brought them together, particularly Louisa, who is the creator of it, and is a very clever product that I've been trying out. So it looks similar to a Fitbit, I would say. Yep, it's a very subtle device, and it vibrates when you move your hand to your face. And so much of these behaviours, it will alert you how commonly you're moving in that way to do them. And like I say in the interview, I am learning a lot about how much I touch my face from it, and make it a bit easier for you to work on reducing the habitual nature of these conditions. So I think that is really brilliant. One thing I wanted to tell you about, which I was looking through their website, they have really tried to make this a friendly and accessible brand. And as such, one of the staff members listed, Oscar, their chief of staff, is a dog. And so he has a section on the website, which I thought I'd read you. So Oscar has spent many a long day under the Nudge desks, taking personal responsibility for ensuring the team takes sufficient walking and eating breaks, and that we scratch his head affectionately more than we scratch ours.
Oh, I love that. That's amazing. More organisations should be doing that.
And so there's an incentive. Even if you want to just visit the website to go look at a cute picture of a dog, I'm going to say nothing about it. You're going to have to go look up the dog and find out what Oscar looks like. But really fascinating brand. And also a first for us getting to talk about technology as part of one of these episodes is something so practical, so cutting edge, something that only launched last year. And for once, we're not talking about social media when we're talking about tech and how damaging that can be. So nice, positive use of tech, which we appreciate.
Yeah. A device that's not associated with yet negativity, but actually using the term device and being really positive about it and its impact. So yeah, that was really cool to talk about.
Absolutely. And one more thing we should talk about very positively is that we are shortlisted at the People's Choice Podcast Awards in the health category again.
Again. Hopefully we'll win it again.
So I want to say thank you to all the listeners that took a bit of time to go onto the People's Choice Podcast Awards website and nominate us in that category. It's just delightful to be shortlisted again in the top 10, and we won it for 2019 and 2020. So maybe third year running, that would be very cool.
That would be very cool.
Yeah, particularly with, we try and always be very honest and real with the show, and it has been really tough recording, you know, via Zoom a lot more, not getting to see as many of our guests in person. We're only just starting to interview in person again now for some of our interviews. Obviously, a lot of people are so used to Zoom, we're not quite sure how much of that will come back, but we're doing our best to still persevere and get better with the technology and do what we can. So it's just so rewarding to see that our work continues to impact people and our listeners continue to be behind it. And awards like this, it's not really about us. It's about the movement. It's about the fact that we can continue what we're doing. A certain amount of clout is required to keep the whole thing rolling along and getting brilliant guests that we get and all of those good things. So, yeah, thank you again for taking the time to nominate us. And we will find out at the end of September if we have won this year, and Danielle and I have to record a video acceptance speech either way, so hopefully it gets used.
Yeah. I'd like to echo everything you said, but also thank you to you, Bob, because you're a great host. You work so hard on the show and you deserve the People's Choice Award. I think that out of all the awards means the most to us, doesn't it? And who'd have thought that week in and week out we always have something else to talk about? I guess it's bittersweet, but we just never run out of topics, do we? It's like it could just go on and on forever and ever. It's cool that we're getting to have these conversations about things that are, some things that aren't as widely spoken about in the mental health space and other things, you know, compared to some things that are really fairly unknown, and we're bringing awareness to all of that. So hopefully we'll keep that up a long time to come. So well done to you. And yeah, thank you for being a great host.
Oh, well, right back at you. And you're right, we'll keep chugging along and very much doing what we do with today's episode as ever. So we really hope you get a lot out of today's episode. We're so glad to be talking about these conditions. We're very open to feedback on our conversations as ever. And indeed, the people behind Nudge are very open to your thoughts about this kind of product as well. So do tell them that Mental sent you if you go pick one up, or just want to get in touch and tell them any thoughts you have about improving their work or providing more information or whatever thoughts you have thunk. So thank you for listening as ever, and please enjoy this episode with Louisa Zetanik and Jessica Farmery in a moment. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
Hi, my name is Jess. My first experience with mental health, coming from a family of medics, both my parents are doctors, so mental health was something which was talked about quite a lot in our family. but it was always talked about as something which happened to other people. So like other people have problems with their mental health. This was not something which necessarily impacted our family. It was only as I became a teenager that I first realized that actually it was something which impacted our family as well as other people.
Interesting. And I have similarly two doctor parents, but that was a reason for us to not talk about it at all, seemingly.
Yeah, exactly. I think for doctors, they like to keep very strict boundaries between work and home, and they don't want necessarily things that they're dealing with in their working lives to infringe on personal lives or their home lives.
And did you get the impression, looking back, that there were things like this, stress from the job or, you know, stuff impacting their mental health that maybe they felt they can't talk about because they're the healthy doctor?
Yeah, I mean, being in medicine is really a stressful career, but I think it was more my sisters and other members of my family who were actually struggling with their mental health, but maybe it wasn't really accepted or talked about so much when I was younger. I think when I was as young as about 7 or 8, and my first memories of I used to start pulling out my eyelashes when I was stressed. But it wasn't always when I was stressed. Sometimes it was just when I was bored. But I didn't really know why I did it. And I knew that it wasn't easy to stop, even though I'd get in trouble with it from my parents. I just, I wasn't able to stop. And then as I got older, through to my like early late teens, I then started like pulling out eyebrows as well.
And when this behaviour started, are you able to remember a particular like first time, or was there an element of it being kind of somewhat automated from the beginning?
Yeah, I don't remember like the exact first time that I started doing it, but I remember being very young, so still in primary school. And I just remember I would be like lying in bed at night, and I knew that I shouldn't be doing it, but my hands would just be going to my face, even though I knew that I was like had massive bald spots like on my eyebrows. And like people would tease me and make fun of me about it. But I just, for some reason, wasn't able to stop myself doing it.
Yeah. And did you notice any kind of correlation between the impulse to do that and, you know, how, let's say, a day at school had gone?
I think as I got older, I started to notice more of a correlation between being stressed and needing to like have some kind of outlet, like a physical outlet for stress, and the amount that I was like picking my hairs. But when I was younger, I wasn't able to like correlate between what was going on in my day and like how much I was using these behaviours.
And I'm just going to bring in Louisa as well, creator of the Nudge Band. In terms of what Jessica's shared so far, is that quite consistent with what you tend to see with these kind of conditions? That because there can be so much misunderstanding or lack of conversation, that then people don't realise what's happening for them when the behaviours are starting to set in?
Absolutely. So that's been sort of really early customer feedback that we've had. It was that, you know, people reached out to us, they saw our product or found out about Nudge, and there were some who for the first time in their lives saw that they weren't alone. So they thought they were the only ones who suffered from this problem. So that was kind of really eye-opening that there were so many customers who felt, or for them, it was actually the first time that they found out BFRBs are a thing, there's other people out there finding access to information. So that was quite overwhelming when we sort of first got those reactions initially, that for many people, we were sort of the first access or tap into a community.
It just shows how little these conversations are had, because I would never have assumed you would be the first place someone might stumble across at learning about this. But it makes sense, and it makes sense that what you do is so geared towards education alongside how can we find like practical products to support people as well.
Yeah, it's just, you know, there's still so many taboos associated. And before sort of diving more into the topic, I wasn't aware of the number of people who were affected and how difficult it could be. I think, you know, for me as well, I sort of suffered from a definitely more minor case of skin picking, but still, this has also helped me become more aware and sort of framing it for myself as well. And that sort of helped me personally as well. Developing Nudge has also been really eye-opening.
Right, and that is something that worries me, the danger of how you could have a mild case of so many conditions, and the shame and stigma that can surround it could make that more severe. you know, so it's so contrary to preventative measures that we know are so important, particularly, like you say, when there's lack of information and the stuff to contradict that. And for you, Jess, getting more aware of this behaviour and what was going on for you, what were those conversations like with people you're close to?
So I never really talked about it with family members and friends, just because when I would bring it up with my parents, they would say things like, oh, you just need to stop doing it, or like, you'd look so much better if only you stopped doing that. They were just saying things that would make my self-esteem be really damaged, and then I'd just feel worse about myself and have lower self-confidence, and then be more inclined to carry on with these like self-soothing, hair-pulling behaviours. And it wasn't until I was maybe in my mid-20s that I actually realised that this was that like hair pulling and skin picking were both like diagnosed, named mental health conditions. So up until that point, I just thought it was some strange thing that only I did, some kind of self-harm behaviour I thought it might have been. I didn't realise that it was actually its own condition, like very separate from self-harm.
Yeah, and I think that's a real common problem, that this can be so commonly explained away. You know, and part of that is it is a difficult conversation to have. It is something that understandably your parents would wish for you to stop doing. But that is because there's clearly an issue there and a behaviour that for you to get out of, as opposed to it being, oh, no, this is nothing. We can bat it away.
Yeah, exactly. They just thought it was, yeah, some kind of habit, like when a baby sucks its thumb or something like that. They just thought it was a habit you just have to stop yourself from doing.
And in terms of hearing that, I'd imagine there were many times when you then did try and stop the behaviour, and then that could damage your self-esteem when it was so difficult to do. But if you've got people telling you, oh, this is just a bad habit, you can just give it up, you don't suck your thumb anymore, it's really difficult to realise that there is a bigger issue here and it's not me acting out in some way.
What actually would happen with me, and what still does happen, is sometimes when I go through extended periods when I'm really being strict with myself and not letting myself pull hair at all, is I actually start doing it in my sleep. So because I've been like repressing the urges so much during the day, when I fall asleep, it's just like my subconscious like has to like get it out. And so I just end up pulling all the hairs out in my sleep anyway, which is incredibly frustrating because you work so hard during the day and then you feel like you've undone all of your progress in the night.
And that must be just so disappointing to wake up to and think, I thought I was making progress and here we are.
Yeah. Very frustrating.
For you, Louisa, when you realised that you had an element of these behaviours with yourself, was that something you talked about at the time, or is this more reflecting in hindsight?
More reflecting in hindsight. So I think, you know, I haven't, even with my family or parents, or so, not just sort of been a vehicle for having that conversation, but before that, we didn't really talk about it. And it was maybe similar to Jess and his experience that, you know, your mom kind of says, ah, oh, just, you know, stop picking or stop doing that. And it looks just makes it all worse. And at that moment, not very helpful feedback.
And I think this is interesting in terms of the treatment and support you can get, because what is actually in many ways to me an opportunity of how physical the presentation of these mental illnesses are, is because of the stigma treated as there's this problem that you need to instantly stop. And so can you talk me through some of what you've learned about practical support methods people can get, and then also where Nudge comes into that?
Mm-hmm. One of the options that is behavior change therapy, and this is sort of where Nudge comes in, because it's a smart wristband that vibrates when you're reaching your face. So it just helps you with raising awareness and the behavior change aspect, because you have this immediate feedback. And it also, the vibration sort of just, you know, lets you know that you're about to touch your face, and that, you know, helps you with trying to adjust your behaviors and giving you that immediate feedback. And also sometimes, you know, when you're not aware, or like when, you know, you're working and you're doing at the computer, you're on the phone and you sort of just end up, you know, reaching to your face unconsciously, then it sort of helps, snaps you out of that unconscious gesture. So it helps, not just sort of targeted at helping you with the behavior change, with adapting your and changing your behavior. And also helping you learn sort of when you do it, sort of also experiencing or exploring your own habits and learning more about when you're more prone to picking your skin or pulling your hair.
Mm-hmm. You kindly sent me one that I've been trying out. And whilst I don't have experience of BFRBs, I have definitely had that experience of it raising my awareness. I don't think I had any idea how much I touch my face. And it is a really clever device. It's just like how accurate it is. For the listeners, I'm moving my hand up to check the vibration, and it's very much working. And so for me, even that was very interesting, is just how automated our body language can be. And that's very much one of the challenges with these conditions, right? How conscious you are of the behavior. And Jess, like you said, even the stuff that you are conscious of, you counteract that. And sometimes you may do it more unconsciously or even in your sleep, right?
Yeah, exactly. Even people who don't have a BFRB will, they'll just be shocked by how often they're raising their hands to their face. And I think also during COVID in the past couple of years, we've all had to be more conscious about how much we're touching our faces and transmitting the virus.
Absolutely. And even I think using Zoom so much has made us very aware of ourselves in a way, right? We're not used to so much of this and staring down the screen. And a lot of people I know very much do need to turn their camera off. Or, you know, I've even one friend that has a book that just goes over half of their screen when they're on a Zoom call because they just find it too distracting. And so sometimes we do even reject some of this awareness because it can make us feel quite self-conscious. And yeah, I wonder how much of that we'd all benefit from being more aware of these kind of behaviours, because even if it's not something that is this kind of repetitive behaviour, there probably are loads of things that we do that maybe come across as a very nervous energy, or we would hate to see ourselves, you know, back on video with certain things. I know if my hair's down, I touch it loads.
With skin pickings, you know, some people who struggle with skin picking, they sort of say they try and remove triggers. So for example, you know, a trigger can be a mirror in their apartment, or having like a, you know, the bathroom mirrors or so with really good lighting. They're just, you know, they invite the whole skin picking and examining your spots and everything. So removing triggers is one thing. The Zoom screen isn't quite good enough for skin picking, I think, but it's definitely, as you say, you know, you're so so much more exposed to your own image and looking at yourself all the time. It's been a new experience for all of us.
Now, I'd also say because people have been spending a lot more time alone over the past couple of years, so that just means probably like more opportunities for like hair pulling, skin picking without people necessarily looking at you. So I think a lot of people might have found that they're experiencing these behaviours more in the past couple of years. And also with like added stresses from the pandemic, from loneliness, it's like all really a recipe for worsening mental health for a lot of different conditions. But I think especially people with skin picking and hair pulling.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know for many people that can get to a stage where you then don't feel you can leave the house because of how your appearance may have been altered. And then again, like you've said, this can create a cycle where then you feel worse about yourself. And then these kind of self-soothing habitual behaviours you built up feel even more intense.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I know personally, for me, it has a really big impact on my self-confidence, my self-esteem and relationships with other people, just because I'm always thinking about what people are thinking of my appearance. Like I'm always second guessing what people are thinking when they're looking at my face. I'm like self-conscious about whether my skin's bad, whether my makeup's smudging. And I hate seeing people if I'm not wearing makeup. I just like have really low self-confidence. I've literally run away from my friends in the street before because I've seen them and I've not been wearing makeup. And I've just been like too self-conscious to have a conversation with them.
Yeah. And did you then find that was part of the difficulty of opening up about it? Because if I talk about this behaviour, are people going to really be analysing me and looking for the signs or watching what my hands are doing?
There's so little awareness of what these conditions are because they're so rarely talked about in the media or even on social media. So people have zero understanding. It's quite daunting to have to explain them to people who don't understand them. Whereas there are other mental health conditions, things like depression, which you get a lot of attention, and it's kind of easier to explain to somebody that you have depression just because of most people already understand what that condition involves. But if someone's never heard of like hair pulling or skin picking, like it's really hard to explain that to people.
Yeah, And that, just the way you described it there, sounds really exhausting, having to constantly be your own advocate in that way and have the perfect answer for everyone's questions, because it's like that for much of mental health conversations. There isn't a perfect answer to make everybody understand. A lot of it is things that you experience firsthand that aren't easily translatable or explainable unless you've lived through them.
Yeah, and everyone has a different experience as well, like with skin picking and hair pulling. So like, I guess I'm fairly unique in that I've never pulled the hair on my head, like on my scalp, whereas some people only pull the hair on their scalp and no other hair. So like everyone has like slightly different experiences there as well.
And Louisa, in terms of the people that you hear from that are trying out this product or are coming to yourselves for information in general, do you tend to find that creates issues for people, that even then somebody will find out, okay, I'm not the only one, but am I doing this worse or other ways in which we can judge ourselves?
I think in general, I think it's been helpful because, you know, we don't sort of say this is the one solution and this works for you. It's just sort of also, you know, trying to create a community and opening up different channels and contacts and tips and sort of being quite open about treatment options. Also, you know, the manifestation of, you know, BFRB. So, you know, sort of also just acknowledging that there's not this one type. It's, you know, quite individual and it really depends on, you know, so your personal background and you know, how it is an issue for you. But it's definitely no standard.
And I heard you share on another podcast just how many messages you receive of how transformational people have found not only using the product, but also just having this conversation, reaching out, knowing there is a community of people that have gone through something similar. There is information, there is loads of help. Could you share what it's been like receiving those kind of messages?
It's been really moving. I think also for people who have never had a chance really to talk about it. You know, we're also stays confidential and we're an anonymous way to, you know, talk about that problem as well. So getting the feedback has brought tears to my eyes. So sometimes, you know, it's crazy if we get some messages and people say, finally, I, you know, have found more information and this product's been great and it's really helped me for the first time in, you know, in years. And I sort of, you know, wasn't hopeful that, you know, I'd find a solution. And so it's been really moving and rewarding.
Yeah. And I think that's a contrast I would imagine that will continue. It certainly has for us, that we're here every week having these kind of conversations and we still get emails from people that have just come across them and feel so empowered to hear really open conversations about mental health and conditions that aren't often talked about elsewhere. And so I would imagine you'll still keep receiving that. And it's so great that you're creating that safe space.
With mental health, it's also, you know, there's not one quick fix either. So it might be a good solution for the moment or help at the moment, but you know, it's so much of it, you know, often it takes years or months or just a lot of work to sort of really find solutions. So I think it's, you know, it's really rewarding, but I think, you know, it's not just one solution to, you know, we're at the moment we're very much single product or single solution. So that's why we're more, you know, we're really thinking about how to create a community and having a bit more of a sustainable, you know, portfolio as such.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's so important to acknowledge and to be ready to signpost, because like you said, it varies so much. There is no one solution. Even if somebody finds a product like this or the information you share really, really helps them, that there'll no doubt be other things that'll come up in their life. You know, there's never one solution for life and then it's like, oh, we're sorted. Great. Jess, could you share a bit about what it's been like looking for and accessing support yourself?
Yeah, so I didn't really start looking for or trying to access support until a few years ago, because I didn't even realize that what I had was actually a mental health condition. I thought it was just a weird behavior or a bad habit that I had. And so I tried mindfulness as one tactic to try and just calm myself down and reduce my stress. I thought that would help. It did help to a limited extent. I did feel like mindfulness did help me calm down my stress a little bit. I was really looking for more of a practical tool, which is why I've been using Nudge and finding it a lot more helpful than anything I've tried before, just because it's not something which relies on my own like 100% on my own mental control. Like it's actually something, it's a physical tool which is going to help me, because it's so exhausting always having to rely on your own willpower, on your own like mental strength. It was nice just to be able to like almost offload a bit of that onto a device.
I imagine quite neutral in many ways when you've had so many other people's perspectives and just do this and just do that, and the misconceptions that come around that, to offload some of that responsibility to something neutral that's not going to tell you the wrong thing, and instead is something that you can build on. Because even just the time I've been trying it out, I'm already becoming more aware of it. Not just how often I'm putting my hand to my face, but also the fact that it counts how many of those movements you have and buzzes more or flashes lights accordingly, I think is really clever. So it's something that you get to build on that behaviour in a positive way.
Yeah, I definitely see it as something which is like supportive and positive, rather than something which is just telling you off or getting angry at you for doing these behaviours. It's actually something which is like, hey, I'm trying to help you out here. Like, I'm here, I'm on your side. That's how I see it.
Yeah, no, that's really lovely to hear. And one thing I'd be really interested in your perspective on, because I've been around close friends of mine who have had conditions that fall under this umbrella term of body-focused repetitive behaviours, it can be really difficult to know how to best support someone, particularly when they may not be quite aware of the extent to which they're doing a behaviour. I think doing the work I do in mental health, I can be hyper aware of things at times, but it's not always appropriate to share how much you're picking up on people's behaviours. So what would you say if someone's in that position and they notice that somebody potentially has one of these behaviours that's causing damage and appears to be repetitive, but something they're not that aware of or not getting help with?
I think from my perspective, I would say try not to comment on the physical manifestations, because that's just going to make them more self-conscious, because I'm sure that they're already aware if there is some kind of physical impact of their behaviours, they're already very, very hyper aware of it. And so I wouldn't want to like make them feel any more like anxious or conscious about that than they already are. I think it's more just letting them know that you're someone who's ready to talk to them or listen to them if they are like ready to open up, but not trying to force anything on them. I think it's just like being there as a listening or a supportive, non-judgmental ear.
No, absolutely. I think that goes for so many things that people would be going through. And I'm reminded of one friend in particular that used to get me to notice it for her to help build her awareness. And I think very much she was in that position, ready to have the conversation and confront it and be made aware of it. But I can see how useful a product like this will be, because as much as I was happy to support, you know, sometimes you are going to annoy somebody. You know, it's one thing to have a band that vibrates and sort of subtly, and if I can personify it, kind of politely almost reminds you that you're doing these behaviours, versus a friend that's verbally reminding you, could be a bit annoying.
Yeah, I think it definitely varies from person to person. Some people would really appreciate having a person telling them to stop it, but other people will just get angry if they have an outsider trying to tell them to stop doing these behaviours. They'd much rather have a bracelet or a wristband, that neutral figure.
Are there things you work on as well in addition to the wristband?
So I'm just trying to do other things just to like generally build up my self-confidence and my self-esteem, because I feel like that when my self-confidence is low, then I'm actually more likely to engage in skin picking, hair pulling, and also things like just getting enough sleep, because it's definitely worse when I'm tired, is something which I've noticed recently.
I know, and it can be frustrating sometimes when you make some of these links and you think, really? It's as straightforward as that. I definitely find that with experience of depression. I've learned to ask myself, is this depression or are you too tired? And actually, as frustrating as it used to be when I started noticing how much one impacted the other, now it's quite a relief to be like, oh, actually, this is something I can take an action about, rather than this is an ongoing dread that I don't know what to do about.
That's great if you have that own awareness and know your body and know when you haven't been eating well or you haven't been sleeping enough. That's really good if you sort of know what helps.
And I think that can be a real aid in having these conversations as well, taking some of the focus off the core behaviour and particularly things like appearance that you could already be hyper conscious of. and instead talking more about looking after yourself in general. And maybe for some people, if you can get those around you on board with that sort of stuff and encouraging you to look after yourself generally, that could be less triggering of the behaviours.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
And if what you're saying today is connecting with people out there that are thinking, okay, I am relating to elements of this, I don't know that much about these types of conditions, what would you say in terms of ways to best understand this and get information and support?
Well, on the Nudge website and the blog section, there's quite a good collection of resources. So people can go on and like read people's testimonials and just learn a bit more about the conditions and actions which they can take to help with their recovery or the management. And there's also an Instagram, which is at the Nudge Band. And on that Instagram account, there's quite a lot of useful information shared as well, and like signposts to other resources.
And as part of this community building, have you managed to speak to many people with similar conditions?
Yeah, it's actually been fantastic to be able to connect with other people struggling with the same conditions, because there's a real sense that you're not alone. And people will like comment on things where they're sharing their own stories. And then you can be like, oh my gosh, I thought that was only me who experienced that. But now I'm seeing like 10, 20 people commenting saying that they've also had the exact same experience. So that's like really comforting.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. And I think there's definitely that any conditions within the mental health world that are just so little known about, it just increases that so much more, the power of meeting other people that get it. And do you find your behaviour or your level of self-consciousness is different when you know that somebody has a certain level of understanding?
I think I've been less like harsh on myself recently, knowing that these behaviours are not something which is necessarily wrong with me. It's not something that I should be blamed for. Not something that I should be angry with myself about. I think I've been more like forgiving and understanding of myself.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, I think it's been like incredibly liberating after nearly 20 years of not being able to talk about two conditions which had a massive impact on like my day-to-day life. Just having like being able to feel part of a community of people who are not only like sharing their own stories and being really open and honest about mental health, but they're also trying to do something really positive to help other people and just kind of break down the remaining stigma which is out there, because there is still a lot of mental health stigma in society, even though we're in like an amazing place compared to maybe 10 years ago. But there are still a lot of barriers that need to be broken down. And so for me, it's rewarding to be like part of a community that are trying to break down those barriers.
Definitely. And, you know, I think at times, particularly running a show like this, we can feel the resistance to that, that we're moving forward. But there are people that want to stay in a certain place with the stigma or want to find ways to say it's good enough. You know, things have moved forward and therefore you should be grateful. But actually, I'm not going to be grateful for something reducing that shouldn't have been there in the first place. And so, yeah, so glad to have you comrades in arms helping work against the stigma and find practical solutions to such common problems that, yes, we need to get talking about. And if the conversation and the tools of support can come in one, like with Nudge, I'm all here for it. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for having us. Thank you for having me on. It's been really great to talk about it.
It's been great. Thank you both.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.